you by Satanic International Network. You're listening to The Ooze.
I'm on the stage, every foul wicked spirit is the host, The Ooze.
20 minutes, that door of a on The Ooze, spread out.
On The Ooze, it's gonna fucking rock. Be there.
The whole point.
To really tap into the adversarial current
necessitates a certain fortitude.
Now onto our show.
All right, it's Sunday night and it's the Outbreak edition of The Ooze. You see what's going on, man. How you been?
I've been all right, dude. How you been? Holy shit, talk about fucking sliding in right at the last minute, man.
it's been that kind of day. So yeah, I just called in like 30 seconds before the show started. So jumping right in, and correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought that part of what we're going to be talking about, or the bulk of what we're going to be talking about tonight, is the 2-year anniversary of The Ooze, or is that for next week?
Actually, I had a little bit of an announcement show last night. In that, I kind of did like a top 10, you know, most listened to. Well, actually, top 9 most listened to, and then the 10th was the worst ever show. And then from there, I kind of threw out a couple of contests I want to do. Like, I want to, at the end of this whole deal, next week on Sunday probably, I'd like to do like a little bit of an award ceremony of sorts, you know, a listener's choice type deal, you know, where first we would like vote on, you know, best quote. So people, you know, who remember something that was said in one of these shows that they thought was just, I don't know, profound, enlightening, amusing, disgusting. You know, email me at bcino@gmail.com. And, you know, that then from there, what I plan to do is, as I gather these actual quotes together, I'm going to send them back off to the people that sent the suggestions. And, you know, you'll get to either stick with your original quote as your vote or pick one of the other ones. And hopefully come up with some kind of a winner by Sunday. So,
right on, man.
I thought that would be kind of cool. Favorite show, that's another one I want to get. You know, at this point, I can go by the stats, which ones have been listened to the most. But just because somebody clicked the button doesn't mean they like the content, you know?
Right, right.
I did, let's see, also we reached over 34,000 listens in 2 years, so I kind of put that out there. Our best month ever was over 4,000 listens. It was March of 2011, so we had a good month right around you know, the springtime. We had a good month, man. Okay.
That's pretty good for a little homegrown internet based you know, web radio show. Just a bunch of knuckleheads basically talking about whatever is on their mind. So yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah, it's not bad, especially when our profile has had 33,000 something like 33,700 and something actual views, which means that there are 500 people that actually went back and listened to the same show twice. So,
right on.
I thought that was pretty cool. There's like a difference of 500. There were 500 people went back and listened to the same show twice. So I thought that was kind of neat too. But you know, today actually kind of, I guess, marks the beginning push of a very long week for me, man. At this point, I have, I've got tonight's show with you. Tomorrow night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a female Satan will be joining me. Tuesday night will be Zach Black at the same time. Wednesday night will be Venger Satanis at the same time. And then I haven't gotten anything in for Thursday or Friday night yet, but there's normally the Outbreak edition at that point. And actually, I think Tuesday night was scheduled later, now that I'm thinking about it, because you usually do your show. Well, maybe I usually do your show at 10 o'clock your time, right?
I've been doing it at 9 o'clock my time, so 10 o'clock your time.
You've been doing it at 9 o'clock. Okay, so I need to
Do your thing. Do your thing, man. I can take a week to just, I can call in and listen. So who's going to be there Tuesday night again?
Actually, it's only a 15-minute show, and it's Zach Black, yeah.
Okay, yeah, then I'll still do the Tuesday show at 9 or whatever.
Yeah, you do yours at 9, and it won't be a problem. So, because it's 9 o'clock my time, if I remember correctly, which means 8 o'clock your time, so you'll have 45 minutes. Saturday at 1 p.m., Dark Fool's going to be on, and I still have, on Friday, I'm going to try to get Lexi, Wicked Pup, both done at the same time, and just kind of show up on their Fallen edition. Or actually, I think they're just going under the Ooze label now. So,
right on.
Then I'm trying to think of who's left. Oh, Jason King. We began discussing it a couple of days ago. I haven't gotten down exactly when it's going to be a good time for him, but that'll be coming up too. I've been working on a fucking monster project banner for the celebration of 2 years. I've actually, I'm still waiting on two particular pictures, but then after that, I should be able to actually put it up on Sin. But at this point, man, this thing's like, I think it's something like 1 meg in size, so.
Right on.
It sounds like
a lot of work, man.
It is a lot of work. Oh, and I forgot, Betty Doom is one I've set a catch to. But she'll be somewhere along here, too. So I'm just waiting for her to get back at me. So this is going to be talk myself to death fucking week, celebration of the Ooze. But, you know, it's all for you guys. I wanted to recognize everybody who has been a co-host here on the show. My idea was that, this success is not mine. This success is all of the people that have worked hard to help contribute something to this. I could not have endured 2 years all by myself. So everybody, that has been a part of this project, just my way of saying thank you.
Right on. I'm kind of surprised that, part of me is surprised that Derek took you up on the offer, and part of me is not surprised. I guess it's going to be interesting to see how that works out. But it's only a 15-minute spot, is that right?
No. Derek opted for the full hour.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be interesting, man.
It certainly should be. I'll do my best to be a cordial host,
Sure.
And I'm certain that, he's well enough aware of the rules of being a guest that it shouldn't be a big issue there either.
Right on.
But it will be certainly interesting, and I'm with you and being half surprised that he took me up on it and half not.
Probably. There's no reason for him to try to turn it down, to be on the Ooze, especially for something like this. It's gonna be an interesting show, man. I'll have to make sure to tell whoever is getting the tattoo at that time that they're gonna be listening to something a little bit different tonight. So definitely.
Right on. Well, we didn't really set a hard topic or anything. I figured we'd spend a little bit of time catching up with him more on what's going on outside of the world of tentacles and viridian magic. And he's getting to get married at the end of this week, from my understanding. Actually, I think that the show will air 2 days prior to the rehearsal dinner. So
right on. Yeah, he's settling down for a domesticated life. You know, he's got the house, he's got the wife and the kid there, or the soon to be the wife and the kid. And yeah, man, I mean, that's gotta be a big kind of, shock, if you will, for him, having to suddenly make this transition, or choosing to suddenly make this transition, especially when you consider, you know, a year ago, he wasn't even sure that he wanted this woman, you know, living with him or what have you. So, a kid changes you, man. A kid changes your perspective. It changes your attitudes about things. And he seems to, you know, dig this chick. So, you know, good luck to both of them.
Yeah, absolutely. I even congratulated him and wished him luck on it. What's funny is this show will be the first time that I have spoken to Derek outside of a couple of texts here and there since all that shit went down almost a year ago, a little less than a year ago. So.
Right on. Yeah, so that's definitely going to be a must-hear show. That's going to be something that people are going to want to check out. I imagine it's not going to be really, and that's the thing, though. You know, think about all the different things that could go wrong with that show. Think about all the different directions it could go in. More likely, it's going to be a pretty even-handed show, you know, so what's going on with you, and what are you doing? Yeah, man. So, but still, it'll be worth checking out.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think that there's going to be any more Maury Povich-type shit going on, man. He expressed to me in private message that he was over fighting with everybody, and you know, I myself have just been over that whole ordeal for a while now, too. So, it'll be nice to be able to move forward. And the way I'm kind of looking at it, the second year of the show coming on, and our focus having been primarily, at least on my end, directed towards social consciousness and getting the hell out of this, you know, mess that we're in. Well, I'll be interested to see what it looks like in a year from now. I mean, when I went back through the archives and was checking out the actual stats of the shows that were listened to, some of them were kind of disappointing, the way that the numbers came through on them. The ones that I really thought were spectacular shows didn't really score as well as I would have liked them to have. I don't know if it was just because it was early in the beginnings of the show. I don't know if maybe I did the topic injustice, or my co-host did, or maybe it's just not something that people are thinking about, which is probably more the case, is that folks really are pretty damn ignorant. And, when you start to get into deeper stuff, they just stand there and stare at their hands trying to figure out if they can, you know, flick the booger off of the tip of their finger without me noticing. So.
Well, I think that has a lot to do with it, that the shows that are a little bit more heady, the shows that a little bit of more mental energy. When you're talking about just a broad-based audience, well, then you're eliminating a huge section of that audience that just aren't going to grasp or understand necessarily what's going on, that aren't going to be interested in the education they might be receiving listening to the show. So the shows that tend to have a that reach out to the widest swath of people possible, those are the shows that are probably going to be probably do the best. It's like in comedy, you know, you might have some highbrow philosophical comedy, some Dennis Miller shit going on, but at the end of the day, they all want to hear, more people want to hear Peter Griffin and some fart jokes, you know what I mean?
Right on. Right. It just goes to show my theory about there actually having been an evolutionary step taken in our species is definitely there. The mindless man does exist.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
So, with all that being said and done, dude, I thought, since we're kind of talking about 2 years or whatever, I would maybe go back over the top nine list and get a little commentary from you as to, if you have any memory of it or, any commentary whatsoever.
Sure. Okay.
Because it was actually interesting. And I'm going to go actually from the top down instead of from the bottom up like I did last night, because I think some people were confused on it. Our number one show, which had just over 613 listens, well, actually 613 listens exactly, with 42 listeners live, was The Character and History of Satanism. If you remember that show correctly, that was the first appearance of Naga Shiva and Venus Satanis here on the Ooze. And the discussion, I don't think, was too relatively dull, but there wasn't a lot of real depth achieved in terms of the actual character and history of Satanism, which is why there ended up being a part two of that. I don't know if you recall that show at all or had any thoughts on it, but I thought that was interesting that that's the most popular show at this point.
Well, I could definitely see it being the most popular, but again, it's because the Satanism name, the tag is on there, that identifier is on there. So when you're looking for something to listen to, when you're bored and you want something interesting and you think you're going to get something titillating, well, that's what you're going to pick up on. And Naga Shiva, Venus Satanis, notorious self-promoters, they're definitely going to be out there letting people know about this show and everything else to check them out on this show. That's definitely probably a good reason for the number of hits. It'd be interesting to sit there and see, if we could find out what shows rated the highest based on some sort of polling data. Like if you listen to a show, if you were asked, would you give this show 5 stars or what have you? And just to see how it works out, how that would average out. I know what you're talking about with being kind of it didn't go as into detail or anything else as maybe I would have liked, or it didn't have the depth, I think. But it is what it is. So
right.
I'm not surprised that it's the most listened to show.
Right. Now, number two at 594 total listens. So that's, what is that? That's 27 listens less than that one. 33 live listeners. The title of the show was Nailed to a Cross. And it was me and Matt discussing the victim mentality and martyrdom in the left-hand path.
Right on, yeah, and that probably had a little bit more teeth to it. That there's substance going on there. When you're talking about that, there's people who are going to want to, they're going to want a dish, but definitely I can see that being, that's a fair second place show, absolutely.
Right on. So number three was at 493 total listens. 27 Live was Highlight Edition, Venus Satanis. That show, I think the only really quality comedy part about it, and it was comedy, was at the very end when Jason King sort of kind of put his foot in his mouth.
Yeah. And that turned out into a whole bit of drama that lasted for a little while, didn't it?
Yes, it did. So I was actually surprised that this one came in number three instead of number one, because I thought that the drama that was attached to that would have been, much bigger catalyst than the other two had.
Sure. Right on. <Wasn't that bad? laughs>
Right on. So coming in at number four was with 461 total listens, 70 live was the Highlight Edition with Zandora LaVey. Now this one here, as far as an actual quality interview, or quality of an interview, it was definitely, I thought it went very well.
Right on. And you're probably talking apples to oranges, too. I mean, you're talking about somebody that in many ways embodies the LaVey version of Satanism and expresses that female aspect of what LaVey, you know, was writing about the Satanic Witch. And a person who's just very, you know, has a very interesting life, you know, has a very interesting perspective, very originally satanic in my mind. Whereas, you know, let's say Venus Satanis, she's very internet oriented, you know, that there's the there isn't a basis in reality. So, yeah, definitely I understand the difference in quality.
Right on. All right, so coming in number five at 459 total listens, six live. Cult of Who, the very first episode of The Ooze. So I thought that was kind of neat.
Yeah, that is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So yeah, and it's you know, and it's something to it can be cashed in on the whole Cthulhu concept, and I'm surprised, I'm still surprised all the time about how kind of popular that that set of symbols is with people when the work even though H.P. Lovecraft, people refer to Lovecraft as, you know, such an influential writer. But we talk about the number of people who've actually read Lovecraft. It's a really, really small number. So, but yeah, that the that whole pop culture Cthulhu thing, I definitely see some listening, some folks tuning in to check that show out when they see it come up in the search.
Right on. So then next, with number six, with 440 total listens, 27 of them live. The Collision of Currents, the debate held between Jason King and Warlock Asylum.
Right on. And that probably was, I mean, it was a decent debate. And I think what's interesting, the result of that debate, is it seems like that both the people that were involved in that debate kind of walked away with a little bit more respect or admiration for the other party that didn't necessarily exist prior to that debate. I think both parties involved still refer to that debate and to, you know, you getting them together as being, you know, a major change in their perspective. So, yeah, that was a good show.
Okay. And now coming in at number seven, lucky number seven, with 432 total listens, 44 of them live, being the second highest scoring live show ever, Jason Sorrell, the highlight edition, Jason Sorrell. So,
well, I think it's because we got a bunch of listeners who are idiots. I've heard that loser talk in different places and everything else. He doesn't know his head from his ass. Yeah, that Jason Sorrell dude is just full of fucking hot air, man. So, no, I think it's cool. I think it's really cool that so many people, you know, check that out and were into that show. I don't know what the hell they were expecting, but I don't know. I guess it's why the books keep selling and the shit keeps on trucking. No matter what kind of craziness I got going on, people seem to tune in.
Right on. So moving along, number eight, with 429 total lists, 24 of them live, Satanic Witchery, the first high edition of Standor LaVey. So I thought it was interesting that the first show ranked so much lower in terms of live listens than the second highlight edition. But when you take a look at 461 for the second and 429 for the first, you know, you kind of I don't know, it was kind of disappointing that you didn't see that same kind of margin carry over for archives.
Yeah, I could definitely see that. I mean, well, and it's, you know, what can you say? It's I'm surprised that you know, I'm always impressed with the archive numbers. I'm surprised that the shows aren't listened to more live. But you know, I guess that's just the way it is.
Yeah, and the archives definitely where it's at. Number nine, and this is something I'm very proud of. Number nine with 427. Archive listen, our 427 total listens and 22 of them live. The Exorcism.
Are you serious?
I'm dead serious, man.
Well, Pastor Bill, Pastor Bob, they were a hot act, man.
So
That's awesome.
I thought that was cool, man. You know, the top nine, and it ranks just at the bottom of it. And then the one statistic I gave last night that I'll give again, our worst ever show with a total of 3 archived listens.
Yeah.
Show me your titties. One of the first Fallen editions. Now, I've had trouble actually locating this show, so I don't know if the girls deleted it afterwards or something, but it shows up in the stats, and it is the worst ever show in terms of turnout. I'm just wondering this, man. All these fucking devil-worshipping fucking heathens, and nobody tuned in to a show entitled Show Me Your Titties? What the fuck?
No kidding. Okay, especially, you know, I didn't catch the show. But I can imagine, you know, what these women might have been doing. I mean, it might be interesting to have an hour-long show where they're taking pictures of themselves and posting it up on a webpage someplace and taking requests in the chat room or whatever, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah.
All right. Well, I just kind of lost my switchboard, so hold on a second. But anyway, that's it. Those are the stats that I went over last night. I thought you would find some of that really interesting. You know me, I'm always like, I don't know why I do it. I guess maybe all the years of retail experience and everything, but I do this trending thing in my head where I look for commonalities and trends to try to find a way to improve the product or the functionality of something as I'm examining it. And in this particular case, man, I mean, I'm really having a hard time figuring out what the actual formula to this shit is.
Right on. And you know what, part of me thinks that should be just the way it should be, that you do the show and no matter what you do, you know, it is what it is. And so it comes down to, you just do what you think is, you know, you do the show that you want to do, and let the crowd come to it. Let, you know, see what happens that way. If we do hit on something someday, I would hate to see the views become formulaic. I'd hate to see the views begin to follow a pattern and a script. Instead, I think this is a refreshing venue when every show, even if it's planned out in advance, you're never exactly sure what the hell is going to go down.
Right on. Well, I mean, you're right. And not so long ago, roughly, I don't know, April of 2011, I decided to start focusing on quality instead of actual, quantity of listens and stuff. But I wanted more quality, more interaction, develop a better relationship with a smaller audience. And I'm not really certain that we're achieving that yet, but our popularity's definitely gone down.
Okay. Well, we're not talking as much shit, I think. I think that's what the internet, that's one of the things that the, when people talk about the internet's for, you know, porn's number one and talking shit about other people's number two. And we're actually having, just like you said, we're having a conversation now. We're engaged in, there's a little bit more thinking required when you're listening to this show. And that means that, you know, the numbers are going to go down. The popular, it's not going to be as popular because there are more idiots out there than there are, you know, people of value. But then it's those people of value that do listen and those people that tune in. Well, those are the ones that are going to be worth having as listeners because they're going to actually provide their opinions and they're going to engage us. So I don't see that necessarily as a bad thing.
Right on. So I know you were expecting this to be all about the 2 years. Did you have anything particular you wanted to make mention about over the past 2 years?
Oh, I've got some things I wanted to talk about. I kind of wanted to pick your brain a little bit. Because I don't think we've actually ever sat down and talked about some of this stuff. This kicked off, in my opinion, the Ooze started before the Ooze. The U started with Twisted Radio.
Yes.
Way back when, man. And I'm kind of curious, and I'm sure our listeners would be interested in hearing, how did this all get kicked off? How did you end up on Blog Talk Radio trying to find a way to do a radio show?
Wow. The 22nd of June, 2007. Yeah, 2007. I'm sitting in my office doing interviews because it's, you know, busy time and I'm in the fireworks business and all that good stuff. And in walks this short little Italian guy with these thick Coke bottle glasses and just a crazy sense of humor. And he's got this voice like you would expect to hear on the radio, right? So I start talking to him about all the stuff I'm doing with Twisted Beast Arts at that point in time. You know, we were doing the drawing contests and trying to rally together artists to coordinate on different projects and create things and trying to make some kind of actual functional business out of all of us dysfunctional people with imaginations. This guy sits down and we start talking back and forth and he's just hilarious. You know who I'm talking about because he ended up as my co-host, Gino.
Right on.
All right. Well, he starts telling me about this thing that he's doing, Snapvine or something like that was what it was called. It was like a voice blog where you phone in and you talk to yourself for a few minutes and then you hang up and people phone in and comment and whatever. And he was gaining some popularity on that. And I was looking for ways to promote my art website at that point in time, Twisted Beast Arts. And I said, hey, you know, I'd like to try a new project with you. I would like to get you launched off. I know this radio station blog thing, Blog Talk Radio, I've listened to, you know, a couple of shows here and there that other people have done on it. And, you know, you've got a voice for radio, and all you would have to do, you know, is pop on there for 15 minutes or whatever and do a little skit. And while you're doing it, you know, make mention of the website multiple times, you know, like, you know, just like some really weird, twisted ranting. I had in mind that I would write out these bizarre monologues for him to go on, and he would just read them off because that's what he did. And what he said to me instead was, no, I'm not willing to do that, but if you want to be my co-host, we could do something a little more serious and a little more fun, something Jerky Boys style. Mm-hmm. And so that's how Twisted Radio kicked off. The first actual show was, I think, the 29th of June or something like that. And we prank called pizza places, Westboro Baptist. There's some crazy hellfire brimstone preacher in Corpus Christi, Texas. We called and left a message on his voicemail. And, of course, this is all before Blog Talk Radio had the call-out feature, so everything was done with three-way dial through my phone.
Mm.
But that is where the beginning of Twisted Radio happened. Yes. And from there, I got this idea, well, if we're going to do this show, we're going to talk about wacky shit, because I already do all this writing about serious shit and all these other places, and you know, I like to cut out and have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
That was pretty much it, man. It went from there. The asylum started, and I mean, you were there for most of it, so.
Right. And yeah, and Twisted Radio, I remember being it was entertaining. It was an hour of, you know, it was having fun, you know, with guys, you know, sitting down and just talking about all kinds of crazy shit, whatever came up. And yeah, I did a couple of call-ins and everything. And it was a cool format. And when they kind of all fell apart, when Gino proved to be a douchebag, frankly, you know, it was kind of disappointing to see it go away. So I was really glad when you picked up with the ooze. And I guess you have to refresh my memory. This is something that happened after you started looking into Derek's whole trip, after you started looking into Cult of Cthulhu. Is that right?
To a point, yeah. I had been looking into Cult of Cthulhu at that point in time. My interest was because I was writing a fictional book, which, you know, part of it can still be found on my twistedbeast.blogspot.com blog. And what I needed for the book was an authentic ritual written. I didn't want it to be anything current or existing. You know, I didn't want it to be like some supposedly ancient Egyptian ritual. I didn't want it to be some ancient Sumerian shit. I wanted something off the cuff, spacey and weird to fit in with my thing. And so, you know, I sent Derek a message on MySpace. Hey, you know, I want you just to write this ritual for me. You know, well, he never did write the ritual, but what it led to was a phone conversation where I mentioned that I had just quit doing Twisted Radio and had been thinking about something, doing something more serious. As a matter of fact, Outbreak Radio was the second progression. I set up that channel long before the use, but I just couldn't piece together the co-host that I wanted. I wanted somebody who complimented me in the same kind of way that Gino did. You know, that Gino, for all of his weirdness and all of his douchebaggery, you know, on the air, had a really good rapport with me. So, and that's what I was kind of looking for. So I made mention of the fact that I was thinking about starting up this Outbreak Radio and that I'd already set it up, and he made the suggestion that, you know, made the suggestion that he could co-host for me. And I said, okay, well, if I'm going to do that, I don't want it to be about, I don't want it to be about all the gags and fun. I want it to be something more serious. And this is, of course, because at this point I was interested in this whole fourth way thing, and of course I've always been a big fan of the Cthulhu mythos. I mean, that's kind of what gave me the whole idea to get in touch with him in the first place, was the fact that the Cthulhu mythos is completely fictional, but a self-sustaining religion of sorts in my mind, so. So, yeah, that's where the kickoff for the beginning of the use came from.
And this thing has, now it's interesting that, you know, we go from one night a week, 1 hour a night, to, you know, Blog Talk Radio is dropping its the account options, forcing people who have free accounts to go to a 30-minute show. You know, moving people that wanted an hour-long show or more to start paying for the premium account, which we did. We started paying for the premium account, and then inviting other people to come on that had, you know, similar, you know, a similar mindset, will, of a different perspective, different interests, to come on and do a show, which is still ongoing. You know, for those people that are, that have the proclivity, have an interest in maybe doing an hour show once a week or whatever. To come on and see what they can do with the ooze. You know, there's a vetting process and everything else. So, but that definitely, it's kind of blossomed into this, you know, multifaceted channel now. Not just one radio show, but multiple radio shows. And I think it's interesting that we tried, I think, with the Outbreak Edition, with the Sunday Night Edition, we tried to keep it light, but so much has happened between now and, you know, way back then, with, you know, what are just our perspectives on things, our, you know, our interests, that it became really difficult to be funny every Sunday evening, be goofy every Sunday evening, when that's really not where we were at anymore.
No, that's not where we're at anymore. It's difficult to make light when a certain amount of awareness or a certain amount of your eyes being opened, and you start to really look around and realize how horrific things really are on the outside. And you know, it's difficult then to joke. I mean, I almost kind of think that we are joking about this in a way, because it's just that bad out there.
Right, right. Yeah, so, and it's necessary to maintain a certain sense of humor, I think. And it's something that hopefully, you know, we get to a point where we can kind of take a deep breath and maybe get back to it every now and then. You know, maybe Pastor Bill and Pastor Bob would come back for an hour show in the future. Maybe we do something else. But I think it's important now that we maximize this venue. We do exactly what we're doing. Not just, you know, putting out information and putting out our ideas and talking about what it is we're doing, but also giving other people who want to discuss what they're doing as well the opportunity and the voice to do so. And this venue, man, you talk about your co-hosts, you know, getting you through this and everything else, but, you know, you've been kind of the thing that your co-host has clinged to. You've been the impetus, the person driving this whole thing for 2 years, and it's been great to be able to support you on this and be behind you on this, but, you know, it's been, you know, TC's the one who's put it together. So don't sell yourself short on that. The U's wouldn't be here if it weren't for you wanting it to, you know, wanting to make it happen. And when people talk about, and there are people who have talked about, you know, what has TC done? You know, how is he manifesting his will and everything else? 2 years of this show, you know, where it's just getting bigger, where it just continues to grow, where the conversation for once a week, you know, we've gone from an hour to 2 hours now. And we fill the 2 hours. We find something to talk about for 2 hours straight. And people are listening not just from our original circle of friends and everything else and different forums we're looking at, but people are calling in from, you know, all kinds of weird places and everything else to share their ideas, because we've kind of hit on that mainstream, you know, we're not a mainstream show yet, but we're engaged in some of those mainstream ideas. I mean, the things we've been talking about for the last few weeks, there's a commercial that's been running on television. It's football night, Sunday night in America, so I'm watching football. And there's this commercial that's been running, and this commercial has this old man sitting on a porch with his grandson. And his grandson asks him, how long have you owned this house, Grandpa? And his grandson's, you know, eight or 9 years old. And his grandpa's like, well, you know, your father grew up here and everything else. You've had this house for a real long time. And the grandson says, well, Grandpa, someday I hope to have a home just like this. And his grandpa kind of looks wistfully into the distance, you know, kind of away from the camera. And he goes, you know what? You know what? I hope someday you can have something like that too. But the look on his face is like, you know, it may not happen. And this is something, the commercial, the voiceover guy comes on and goes, for the first time in America, the possibility of home ownership is not as secure as it once was. You know, basically, it's right along those same things that we're talking about, the same concerns that we have. So it's, you know, it's interesting that this show has evolved and is now kind of on that cusp of things. And I know we're not, you know, we're beating the same, you know, drum that a lot of other places are beating and everything else. But we're actually talking about doing something more than just supporting the status quo. So it's interesting to see how things are going.
Right. I agree with that. I'm, as well as I seem to keep my composure and things, I'm sometimes a very impatient person, and I find myself often feeling like I'm holding my breath, waiting to see if anybody else is going to, step forward. It's how I feel a lot of the same time. I mean, I feel like I've already sort of stepped forward, and a lot of the things that I've been doing are in preparation to continue to step forward. You know, the first step of doing anything is just making up your mind that you're going to fucking do it. And that's, you know, but it's something that I guess I was reflecting on when I came to realize that 2 years of this show, all of these people have been gracious co-hosts. Even with the whole, big dramatic to-do with the separation from Derek in the beginning of this here, it didn't have so much to do with the actual ooze itself as it did with what was going on over there. You know, there was not really any negativity, at least I don't think, expressed towards the show itself. Anyway, getting to what I was saying, so I started looking at all of these things, and I started thinking to myself, well, there is this group of people that's stepping forward, that, you know, what I've been holding my breath for is in fact happening, and I'm seeing it, because these are my co-hosts, these are my comrades, my colleagues, my countrymen, so to speak. And so that's what made me decide to make this big to-do about the 2 years and everything. I mean, last year at 1 year, we kind of, you know, blew a kazoo and waved our little party favor, and it was over. But this year I thought that, you know, a solid week of celebration was something that was deserved, not for me, but for you guys, because it's my appreciation for the friendship that has been offered, you know?
Right on. Right on. Absolutely, absolutely. And then, well, and it's not just, you know, talking about the co-hosts and everything else, the people who tune in to listen to these shows, whether we're just talking out of our ass and it's none of it makes any sense, or when we're saying something that's profound or what have you, you know, the people that actually tune in and listen to these shows, that tell their friends to tune in and check the show out, to go check out this archive. I mean, it's, you know, it's one thing for you and I to dedicate 2 hours every Sunday to sit here and talk back and forth to one another. It's quite another thing to, you know, to tune in and listen and, you know, I guess be entertained. I mean, that's always amazing to me. So, and the fact that our, you know, our fans, the people that actually listen in, the people that that dig the show, our patrons, are so about it. So dedicated and so willing to go ahead and make sure that other people are aware of it and doing what they can to help promote the show too is just awesome. And I think it's a testimony to just how well the show kind of works out, the way it's formatted and everything else. Just the just, you know, that they dig, people dig what we're doing, and it's an interactive format too. I don't know if folks want to call in tonight and talk about, you know, whatever the hell. I mean, you want to talk about the, you know, your memory of the Ooze or the last 2 years. If you want to talk about, you know, a good moment or a bad moment or whatever, 347-989-1371. And we're also always looking for new ideas, too. You know, if people want to call in and go, you know, hey, I've got this idea, maybe you guys should go in this direction or that direction, we're always willing to hear that. And of course, we're always available via email. So that being said, as wonderful as our fans are, there's always that question as to, you know, there's a lot of things we ask folks to do that, you know, it never seems to occur. You know, whether it's, I don't know, off the top of my head, you know, we're not, and this isn't a, you know, kicking the ass, we need donations or whatever like that, but we talk about how we're offering up stickers and stuff like that. We talk about how we're, you know, we're doing little things to help promote the show and everything else. And if you're a fan of the show, you know, this is one way to do it. But just getting out there and telling people about the show is huge. It's huge in and of itself. So we greatly appreciate that, and we hope that continues.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, wow, we almost killed an hour with this. I'm impressed.
Well, what we've got going on for the week or whatever. I didn't know if we wanted to do another, you know, show at least this week on the whole being prepared, creating that buffer, getting ready for, you know, a change in our social fabric. But I did have some thoughts on that. I had a discussion with Jamie, and one of the things that kept occurring to me, and some, you know, in line with that commercial, in line with all that, is that. This, what we expect to happen when we retire, what we expect to happen when we reach that point in our lives where we're supposed to be able to kick back and relax and enjoy the fruits of our labor, that opportunity isn't going to exist for us. That the idea that, you know, you're going to have a pension and you're going to augment that pension with Social Security and the money from your investments, that's not going to be a reality for us. So because that reality is not going to exist for us, we need to start thinking about other options. We need to start thinking about other possibilities. There's a generation of people who will work until they die. And that's just part of, that's just going to be the reality. It's going to be the nature of things where, you know, the things that that our fathers had to fall back on won't exist for us, which is why it's so important that we have these conversations now, which is why it's so important that we start creating these different buffers, which is why I think the use, you know, despite its seeming a slip in popularity, continues to serve a very, you know, a necessary purpose, and will reach those people that that need it. So I think it's a big deal.
Right.
But that I think is where we're going now in our minds.
Absolutely. Real quick before we actually get into the stuff that people really want to listen to. I just wanted to make mention that the Ooze was honored with a Wicked Stepsister show here on Blog Talk Radio, The Goo. Kind of a parody of us, kind of, you know, one-man social commentary type deal. I've listened to a couple of the episodes, or at least one of them. I'm certain of that. Not bad stuff. So I think that's cool that there's you know, some inspiration drawn from that. But now on to the, you know, meat and potato of things. What are we going to do when we get old and we can't do for ourselves anymore?
Well, that's kind of the question that I keep asking myself. It's a question I think we keep running into. Whether it's a matter of the options that we have been taught to expect simply don't exist, or that the system that supported those options has failed in some way. And no matter how you cut it, no matter which way you're going, whether it's, you know, a collapse of the system, a change of the system, some sort of, you know, issue occurring that causes things to bottom out, it's a matter of, it's the same thing we keep talking about. We're talking about awareness. Talking about recognizing reality, talking about not having any, you know, delusions about what, you know, yourself or what you see in your environment or what's going on. So it's a matter, I think, first of all, is just taking stock, you know, taking a really hard look at what's going on and not putting your head in the sand, basically, but actually taking some steps to do something. Even if all of your preparation, even if whatever steps you take to avert any potential disaster occurs, any of these things that you do, even if it ends up being a waste of time, it ends up being completely pointless because the economy gets better, the world turns, you know, does a 180 and everything starts being, you know, milk and honey again. Well, then you still at least took some steps to avert that disaster. You at least have that, you know, you have that buffer that it, I believe, is necessary. Something I keep pointing out, the discussion we've been having is about water and about the point of saving water. We calculated that we're going to need about 52 liters of water, basically, to sustain ourselves for a week. That's a lot of fucking bottles of water. And, you know, the argument, you know, that was being made was, so you get all these bottles of water, what happens if you never have to use them? Well, if I never have to use them, great, that's super. But there are afternoons when, there's been several times since living in this apartment complex that the water main's gone out. And during those afternoons or whatever, I've had no water to cook with or whatever. And instead of just being inconvenienced and not having the options that I'm used to, now I can reach into my closet and grab water, you know, and be ready and continue living my life as I choose to live it. So it's not about averting disaster. It's not about necessarily preparing for the end of all things. It's just recognizing that there's some flexibility, more freedom, more self-determination, and just being a little bit more prepared for these eventualities to occur. People have auto insurance, and for whatever reason, auto insurance seems to make sense to people. That's why there's some bitching and everything else about auto insurance, but when you're talking about auto insurance, you're talking about, you know, paying now a certain set amount every month to make sure that if there's a big disaster in the future as far as your auto your vehicle is concerned, you've got it taken care of instead of, you know, waiting until that big disaster happens and then being fucked. So maybe the whole thing we got going on here is just we're trying to avoid being fucked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. The difference between auto insurance and the water, the two examples that you gave of preparation, the water, you don't have a middleman really going there. You can be absolutely certain, barred some, event of supernatural force, that water will be in your closet when you need it. The thing about going through the third party for the insurance and relying on them to secure your vehicle in the future in case you have that act of catastrophe is that their job is literally to take your money and then find a way to fuck you out of it when you actually need them. So.
Right, but the mentality is the same. The mentality behind why you do that is the same. With insurance here in Texas, we do have the option of if you can prove that you have the means, the financial wherewithal to pay for any damages you might cause while driving your vehicle, well, then technically you don't have to have auto insurance here. I absolutely what you're saying, and that's the kind of thing that concerns me is that going back to the water thing, if you're reliant on the local utility to make sure that you continue to have water coming out of your taps, if that's the resource, if that's as far as you go as far as securing your own needs, securing your resources, well, then there's that middleman there that if he fails, you're fucked.
Right.
It's the same with money. It's the same with so many of these things. You know, the grocery store. If the grocery store closes tomorrow, you're fucked. If as far as you went preparing yourself was being reliant on those things that you expect to always be there. And that's what we see going on, I think, is that when we're talking about our futures, when we're talking about the coming changes to our society, and they're coming. These things are happening, you know, pretty much no matter what you do, there's going to be these changes. If you're counting on things to be the way they were for you as they were for your father and your grandfather, it's going to be ugly. It's going to be a hard existence for you in about 5 to 10 years.
Right on. Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's why the point that I was making is it's important at this point to cut out that middleman, to get rid of them, you know. If we just had a different mentality about things, you know, if we, instead of paying auto insurance, we drove the car that we had and just stuck the money we would have put into auto insurance into a fucking bank account or something, or your pillow, your old lady's petticoat, whatever. I think we'd find that you'd have more than enough to cover it when you do actually have that time, that accident.
Right.
What I find
most insidious about our system of doing things, and staying with that analogy, where if you were told, if you were told from day one, growing up, the first day in school or whatever, that you are responsible for yourself, you're responsible for all the things you do, you're responsible for anything that you pull off, your successes and your failures, you are responsible. It is all on you. So that when you get that point where you're 16 years old, it's automatic that as part of having that driver's license, with whatever other qualifications you have to meet to have that driver's license, part of what you have to meet also is a fucking savings account where you're packing away money on a monthly basis or whatever. On a regular basis, money's going to that account just for the thing you're talking about. That is your auto insurance. But we're not there. What's insidious about our system is that it's so half-assed. It's you're half-assed responsible for yourself. But we also have the government is half-assed responsible for you. In my opinion, if you were to go to the one extreme or to the other, you know, I'm almost to the point where I think to advocate, you know, if the government were to come in and say, this is the way it's going to be, and here are your steps, here's your fucking number, here's your job assignment, that would be better than this half-assed bullshit that we deal with, you know, than the lie that that's not the case. I mean, I don't know about you. Well, I do know about you because you're just like everybody else in the United States. You've got a number the same as I got a fucking number. And just we don't have a job assignment, but there are certain jobs out there that we're qualified for. So the assignment has been pretty much determined. And you go out and you have that job and you do that job and you meet your obligations or what have you. And if you don't meet your obligations, well, they pull your number and it's your ass. That's the system we exist in, but we pretend like it's not that. We pretend like there's some semblance of freedom. And
yeah.
I think what we're doing here on the news is calling bullshit.
I would agree with that entirely. I would say that we're going maybe even a little further than calling bullshit and saying, okay, now handle it.
Right. Right.
It's one thing to look at.
Go ahead, dude.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's one thing to look at a car and say, yeah, you know, your O2 sensor's bad. It's another thing to open the fucking hood and actually fix it. So, you know, just kind of wanted to say that.
Right on. No. And I think part of what we got going on here is that, again, we're this generation. We're this group of people that have, you know, we've been told one thing. These are the expectations. These are the things that you should come to realize. These are the things that you need to know. We've been told that this is what we should expect, and we're finding something entirely different than that. We're finding that all the promises were made, all the things that we were told, you know, work hard and this is what you'll get, it has been bullshit. We're coming to a point where we have to make a decision. We have to choose to do what you're saying, to open up that car hood and actually see about fixing the problem for ourselves. Or figuring out whether we even need the car to do what it is we need to do. And I think a lot of what we're doing here is as much as we're talking about different ideas, as much as we're talking about whether it's the philosophy behind it or the actual application of different things, part of what we're also doing is going, man, if you've got an idea, if you've got something that you think, you know, people, we need to hear along these lines, we need to hear it. We want to hear it. So, you know, give us, shoot us an email, give us a call, let us know, you know, what it is you're thinking. And one of the big ideas that I'm still trying to develop in my head, and I know you're a little further along in this than yours. One of the big ideas, I think, is returning to a community, you know, the clan idea, where it's not advocating your individualism, but it's recognizing that your individualism is better supported when you're a participant in a group of people who are like-minded in ideology, like-minded in mutual interest, and have that sense of obligation or are beholden to one another in some way. My thinking is that this is if not the answer, it's one of the better ones.
Right. I would agree with that. I think it's kind of hard to say, man, because I almost don't want to say it, but I think that if somebody doesn't say it, you know, we may forget that this option is also there. If all else fails, there's always that one last final worst case scenario. And that is that, you act with transgression. You know, if you face the choice of dying, you know, old and hopeless somewhere in the woods, you know, then the next thing that you can do is, you know, take from other people. I hate to say it like that, but I specifically mean the ones that are, ridiculously too well off.
Right, and it's going to come down to two different types of people. I think you're going to have the people that embrace security over freedom, and then you're going to have the people that embrace freedom over security. And then it's going to be the people that, you know, embrace freedom over security. Their mentality is going to be by any means necessary, and that may mean that, you know, you're picking off whatever you can from those that are holding too much of the resources for themselves. I don't think that we're advocating necessarily, theft. But maybe a redirection of resources. And while we're engaged in the game, I think that's something we're talking about, is that while we're engaged, while we're part of this system, while we're participants still, beginning to figure out what resources we can begin to leech off, what resources we can begin to redirect so that we eventually are able to establish ourselves distinct from that system.
Right. Absolutely. I think it's important. I mean, the resources, material in general, is a limited thing. There's only so much of it, and there will never be new, if that makes sense. You know, there's only so much matter in this universe, and it transforms into energy and then recycles itself out. So, I mean, at least that's my understanding of modern science as it breaks down to now. So I guess what I'm saying is the more that you have of it now, you know, the more ability you have to draw from, you know, the less you have to worry about waiting for it to regenerate later. You know, the question is, you know, what type of material? You know, obviously that 60-inch fucking flat screen TV that you have sitting in your living room isn't going to help you catch a fish. Not unless you're lucky enough to be able to hit the damn fish with it as you're throwing it in the water.
Right. Well, and when we talk about resources, that's something else that, you know, one of the things we discussed is, you know, changing our value structures, changing, you know, our ideas of wealth and what is necessary and things like that. I don't think that there is a limited number of resources, exactly as you're saying, that there's a finite amount of matter in the universe. There's a finite amount of matter on Earth. I don't think our population has reached a point yet where we are in excess of the resource potential of our planet. I think there's plenty, there's abundance out there in the world. The problem is that we've been convinced that there's these artificial parameters. We've been convinced that there's only certain, you know, channels from which we can receive those resources. There's only certain places you can go to get these things that you need. And if you don't go to those places, well, then those resources just aren't available to you, which is a load of shit. It's, you know, it's the same thing that we keep kicking back to, that, you know, if you walk outside and if you have any sense of self whatsoever, if you have any awareness whatsoever, and just a little bit of education, just a little bit of self-training, basically, you'll find that the things you need are waiting for you right outside your door for you to just take. But it means a shift in your values. It means a shift in your perspectives. It means a willingness to be ridiculed, basically, for the choices you're making. Even if you're sustaining yourself, even though you're not engaged in the things that everyone else is engaged in, you're still, you know, maintaining the self and able to take care of yourself, probably arguably better than people around you who are limited by how much money they have in their pocket and their ability to go purchase whatever they want from a third party.
Right on. I'm just sitting here. The problem is so complex in itself and understanding what reality actually is, because we're so far removed from it at this point. You're right. We do buy into a lot of misinformation. I don't know if it's intentional deception, although the longer and longer I look at it, the more and more I think it can't be something that's just occurred. Where the hell was I going with this? Yeah, blah, blah, blah. You can tell that this is going to be a long fucking week, man.
Well, as far as intent's concerned, like I said in the video I shot responding to or asking questions about Darkpool's Middle Path, which Darkpool actually has put out a response, a part one to a response to this. And if you haven't checked that out yet, I recommend everybody check that out on YouTube. He's coming up with some very, you know, intelligent answers, some interesting answers, especially considering the perspective he's coming from. And I'm waiting for him to complete the whole process so I can go ahead and respond to what he's talking about. But like I said in this video, to me it doesn't matter if it's intentional or unintentional. The issue isn't, you know, where is this oppression coming from. The issue is the oppression is there, that it exists, and it needs to be, you know, dealt with. It needs to be managed or negated. that we need to engage it. It's not just a matter anymore where, you know, we just go, that's the way it is. That's burying your head in the sand. And I don't think we can afford to do that kind of thing. I think we need to step up and actually, you know, and take action. And we're talking about a very complex issue, as you said. Each of us needs to try to figure out what we're going to do. And each is, hopefully, we have, if we got 100 different people trying to figure out what it is, you know, how we deal with these things, we should have, hopefully, 100 different answers. And then it's just a matter of compiling, figuring out, you know, what ideas work best, what strategies are the most effective, what things, you know, what things really, really are of benefit, and then narrowing those things down and, you know, working on those things in particular. The Sly Man idea, that it's not a matter of, you know, going with one philosophy or another philosophy, but trying to see the whole at once and then drawing on what is most necessary or what is most efficient.
Right, and that in itself, I mean, it takes an extraordinary amount of self-questioning. You know, you can, wait, we got... Oh, we've got some commentary in the chat room. I'm sorry, I'm going to stop what I'm saying here and kind of... we have the Mortgage Auditing Service has made the statement in the chat room that it's only going to get worse, especially after the next round of about 3 million foreclosures, which are going to happen by December, I guess, occurs. They didn't actually make that any like a final, you know, idea or suggestion to it. I'm assuming that they have an inside track that I don't have. I'm not actually quite familiar with whether or not there is going to be 3 million more foreclosures, but I wouldn't doubt it. I lived down in the South Fort Myers area for a while, and I noticed right about 2006 that all of the construction there literally came to a halt, and less than 2 years later, you could drive around any 5-square-mile area and find, I mean, just thousands of just block structures that were supposed to eventually become homes. I mean, it was just four walls, basically, and a concrete pad.
Well, I think a lot of the housing market issue is that you had a lot of people that shouldn't have had homes in the first place suddenly being given homes. And the reason they were interested in having homes is because that's what they were told they were supposed to do, is that they were supposed to purchase homes. That was the American dream, whether they were prepared to do so or not. And it's interesting, when somebody throws out a number like 3 million foreclosures are going to occur in the next so many months. 3 million foreclosures sounds like a lot. I mean, it's a huge number, 3 million houses being foreclosed on. But we're also talking about 1% of the population in the United States. There are 300 million people here. So when we're talking about relative to the total population, how big of an issue is it? You know, is it really outside the norm that these number of foreclosures go on? And I'm not saying that it is or isn't. My point being that this is how information is being manipulated. This is how, you know, we're being told one way or another that things are going bad or going to be good or what have you, by putting up these numbers without actually giving you a point of comparison. It just sounds like a big number. And as far as, again, the housing issue, when you've got people whose value structures have been skewed, when you've got people who've been programmed to believe that the thing they need to have is a house, when they might not necessarily need a house, when they might not even be in a position to have a house, and you give these people a home, well, then what you're going to have is eventually these people are not going to have a home anymore. It's going to get foreclosed upon. And what good does it do the bank to have 3 million houses that they can't sell, that won't move on the market? It doesn't do them any damn good at all. And again, it's because we have a skewed value system. We have
right.
we've placed an emphasis on the finances and wealth and everything else of this, you know, the money thing, this illusionary piece of paper and everything else is supposed to mean something. This is where our emphasis is at, and it's a call again for a shift in values.
Right on. And I'm just going to say, because, I mean, there seems to be an alternative vantage point being mentioned in the chat room. I'm I'm going to ask them to go ahead. It's 347-989-1371. Call in. If we're getting it wrong, tell us. I mean, you know, we're most certainly willing to listen to other people's ideas. I mean, we're all kind of in this together at this point, whether we like it or not. So.
Well, and of course, when he sits there and says that people, it had nothing to do with people not qualifying. Now, I'm not saying that these people didn't qualify. I'm sure they met the qualifications. I'm saying that the standards were so low that anybody could have qualified. And nobody questioned, including the people that purchased these homes, nobody questioned whether or not they should have purchased a home, whether or not they should have engaged in this, you know, these risky loans and everything else. Whether, you know what, if you think about it this way, when we're talking about having a structure to live in, I mean, 100 years ago, you didn't go to a bank to get a loan to buy a home or whatever. You bought the material yourself, or you chopped down the trees or whatever you did, and you built the home yourself. You found a way to do that. It wasn't a huge expense to go out and do that kind of thing. And now, you know, to get a home, it's hundreds of thousands of dollars to buy a home. It's not even really your home because of the plot of land it's on. You know, you pay your property taxes and everything else. And it used to be when you bought a home, you would buy a home with the idea that this is going to be your property and something that you're going to pass down to your children from that point forward. Now, a home is something that you purchase when you're young so that when you retire, you can liquidate that asset and live the rest of your life on that cash. So, again, one more thing that our fathers and our grandfathers had that we will not have in the future. The majority of people are not homeowners and will never own a home here in the United States.
Jason, we've actually got the caller on the line, so I'm going to go ahead and bring them on, all right?
Right on.
All right. Is it working here? Yeah. 815?
Yeah, hey, how's it going?
It's going, man.
Oh, yeah, right on. No, actually, after he kind of reiterated or put more understanding to what he was saying, he was kind of halfway right. You know, there were people out there that were getting loans and mortgages that they had no business getting. You know, I mean, you did hear cases where there were guys, you know, people going out getting, you know, over in California and whatever various states. I mean, it wasn't even just California. It was happening all over the place. They had no business, in a sense, getting jobs or not getting jobs, but, I mean, getting houses. You know, they're making $8, $10 an hour and getting a $500,000 loan. But like the one guy, I didn't catch his name, was saying, you know, you're programmed to think that it's the American dream and so on. You know, you grow up, you get a job, you get a family, you get a home, the whole, you know, chain of effects are supposed to happen. You know, you retire, do whatever, blah, 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 and all that stuff. But part of the problem is, you know, there's a huge obligation, not just because, you know, the bankers and the mortgage, you know, these companies didn't do. And it was because they wanted the money. You know, sure, everybody, a bunch of people might have went out and applied for a loan and so on and blah, blah, blah. But the banks had a liability to protect those people from getting those loans in the first place. They were too busy, worried about selling that market, selling, you know, getting that loan out, making their profits and sales and so on and blah, 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 and taking that note and going to get it out the door to go securitize it. So they had no, they could have cared less who they were giving loans to, whether they had a right to getting a loan so huge or not, because it isn't even just, you know, the big mortgage crisis. The problem is people think that it's just about a bunch of people that went out and got loans that had no business getting the loan, and that's not true. It happened to everybody. They've determined in 90% of the loans between 06 and 09 that the banks don't even technically rightfully own the houses in the first place. So whether you're in foreclosure or not, you were making a payment to the bank on a house they didn't even legitimately and rightfully own in the first place. So they've securitized this, which is illegal as all hell in the first place. Okay? A security and a note cannot exist at the same time. And that's part of...
What about all this talk about how, in a lot of the cases, the banks were basically required to provide loans to people that they may not have given loans to normally because of government programs encouraging home ownership amongst a certain group that qualified or should have been given the opportunity in their minds. So we're talking about Freddie Mae and or Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac or whatever.
And that was kind of a big question amongst a whole bunch of people. That was a big topic in one of our classes that I, or seminars in various classes that I've taken, because they were pushing such other. So it kind of made you wonder. And then after the whole bubble burst, that, you know, were these guys in it more than they're saying they were into the process, because they're saying, you know, willing to hand out all these loans and so on and blah, blah, blah. And then they're screaming at the banks, you know, well, what did you do all this for, and acting like they had no knowledge for this stuff. So there was there's still a big crosstalk of how much, you know, some of these government politicians and so on, senators and so on, knew what was going on and how many of them made money off the situation. And, you know, other various forms of possible connected fraud to it. And I think that's still, you know, somewhat being investigated. But the last investigation into the whole situation was government saying to the banks, well, okay, we're not going to really create a committee to investigate this stuff. So what we're going to do is you're going to go in to investigate it internally, and then you're going to tell us what went wrong or who you screwed over in your mortgage process. Well, do you think that's really going to happen? How well did that go, obviously? Because it's still happening. So, right. You know, the whole, it gets really complicated. There's actually, if you really want to learn about the stuff, there's a movie out called Inside Job. It's an independent film. And it lays down the whole, like, from the beginning to the end. Everything and everybody, all the major politicians, governors, senators, people from the security exchange, all the way over to the Federal Reserve, all kinds of stock market people, bankers, CEOs, you name it. It gave up their earnings and salaries during the whole process. And everybody in the government sector there was one lady involved into it that kind of threw up a red flag way early. She said because of there was a situation with Procter & Gamble that had happened, she spoke up to the government and said, here, this is what's going on here with Procter & Gamble and this other company and this kind of a mortgage default swap situation that was going on with them, and so this can grow up, to balloon out to be a really, really, really huge bad, you know, situation if this sort of stuff is allowed to happen. So Greenspan and all them guys just old railroaded her and said, no, this can't happen. The more, you know, the stock market is not going to allow that to happen. The market's not going to allow anybody to commit any sort of fraud on any sort of grand scale and bankrupt America. Roughly 3-4 years later, what happens? You know, the bust. So, but that's, you know, in the whole scheme of things, it was the banks securitizing the note, separating the note and the mortgage. And in that whole process, you can't do that. That is illegal. That strips away the security component level to the contract. So everybody in America.
If I can interrupt you real quick, because I think we all have a pretty solid grasp that a bunch of fucked up things happened. It's trashed our economy. A bunch of things that happened that shouldn't have happened have gone wrong, and now we're all paying a price for it. Now we're all facing a much more bleak and much more different future than the future we were told we were going to experience when we were in school. I guess the question I would ask is, sure, we could point fingers and we could try to hold people accountable who will never be held accountable for the things they've done. We can try to actually try to get these people, you know, to come to justice, but we know that will never happen. Since you began your statement by saying that you understand that the American dream is not the same anymore, given what you understand about the system, given what you understand about at least this aspect of this, the home ownership thing, what would you say is the new American dream? What would you say to our listeners is what they should be doing to secure something for themselves?
Getting educated. Knowledge is power. I think of nowadays, talking to families and so on that have gone through anything, you know, because there's a lot of companies shifting their, you know, they're closing down, they're moving out of the country, they're that, or they're just having to close down in general because economy's going bad. And so, you know, the new dream is, well, keeping what you got, however you can, you know, or it seems to be trying to keep what you got, however you can keep it, and not lose your butt too bad, or not end up homeless, so to speak. But ultimately, the way to survive is getting educated. You know, knowledge is possible. Eventually, as we all stand up, and we're not going to take this crap anymore, you know, that, you know, this is, we can't, America can't function like this. And
right. So, education in what way? Education for what purpose? What is it that you think people should be learning? What is it you think they should be doing? How should they be preparing themselves?
Right on. Well, the education they should be learning is about, you know, at this point in time, you know, what their rights are as far as redeeming their house being able to keep their houses and keep their family safe in one place. Getting on things like YouTube and looking up bankruptcy laws, because actually there's a whole bunch of stuff over YouTube that would help assist them in that. And don't spend any more of your money than you have to outside of your, you know, priorities. You know, if you've got extra money to go out and do something somewhere, you know, sure, whatever. But I don't go out as half as much as I used to. I save my money now. When I think I'm going to go out to a movie or go do something somewhere, I just kind of, you know, I break it down to just sit home and save my money and wait until, you know, I've got a decent amount saved. I go, you know, I stock up on food and things like that. I don't go out and buy a big screen TV because, you know, I haven't had to pay my mortgage in 7 months. Because of a foreclosure issue or something like that, you know, it's just a matter of saving up everything now. I kind of hoard a little bit more. I don't go out and spend more on entertainment and games and going to concerts and things like that. So
well, I think listeners here, especially the folks who have been listening to the last, you know, 3 or 4 episodes of the show, we've kind of gone a little bit further in our minds. Like you're talking about defending your rights, knowing what your rights are and everything else. We're not confident that we have a government anymore that will acknowledge those rights. And we're not confident that we live in a society anymore that will...
I agree.
So,
I agree. It's a matter of, you know, I guess, you know, you can go through all the, you know, it makes it hard these days. It really does, because the way things are going, I mean, you hit it on the nose. You know, you can learn everything in your, you know, all about the Constitution, everything else, and state, local laws, federal laws, and everything in between. The problem is, you know, if they fall on deaf ears, then, you know, there's no results to it. And I think it's, you know, it becomes a point of, I guess, you do what you can, learn what you can to make an effort. You know, if you don't do it, what happens? You know, you fail. So if you don't, you know, you're going to ask yourself, I guess it's kind of like one of those double-edged swords. You sit there and do nothing and nothing happens, and if you do something and nothing happens, at least you tried. You know, because, it's all up to the, you know, the politicians and all that crap. I mean, what's going to be scary, and I hate to make, you know, I hate to even think about it, as time has gone on, that, you know, as these more foreclosures progress and things like that, people are losing their jobs and stuff, you know, the rest of the economy, how's it going to tank? Or you know, are they doing this on purpose for some other financial gain and control over Americans?
Sir, I don't mean to interrupt, but what Jason was actually kind of getting at is that we're proposing a way that you can actually take some action right now, and you don't have to actually be so much at the mercy of the powers just to be. The strategy, I would say, is to exist between the lines in a way, if you understand what I mean by that.
My phone, what was that last part again? My phone kind of chirped on it, so I didn't...
I said our strategy is to sort of exist between the lines to create kind of a separatist mentality. You know, clan together with people of like ideas, people who, you know, you train together and work in the fashion of a community. I'm not necessarily in the traditional sense of a commune, but maybe something more like what you would have seen in the 1600s in China. You know, you have five or six generations of families living in these big houses and drawing their resources together rather than trying to struggle at this thing by yourself. But the greatest strength that we have is that people in small numbers actually can be very beneficial to each other and be stronger than people in larger groups.
And I think we appreciate you calling in and giving us that insight as far as those classes and everything that you were taking about the mortgage situation. And I think you just underlined, you know, what we're talking about, that, you know, the system that we've come to rely upon, the system we've told would be there for us, for our benefit in the future, is fading away. And it's going to take a shift in our value structures, a shift in our perspective to kind of move on. So I appreciate you calling in tonight, man.
Right on. Yeah. No. I mean, it's, and I'm all about spreading it because it's people gotta, you know, you gotta know what's happening and what what's in store, because, you know, it's rough. And, you know, when they're talking another 10 to 15% decrease in property value over the next, you know, 6, 7, 8 months as well. I mean, all that stuff we've all grown to, you know been raised, you work for a house, you know, and you put all this equity and sweat into it, and you're thinking, okay, I've got, you know, my place, and it's worth at least this much, and, you know, when I go to resell to move into something maybe even bigger, a little fancier, now you can't do it because, you know, your debt ratio to what you owe on the, you know, the value of the house is over 80%. They're not going to give you a loan.
And we appreciate you calling in. No, we're going to go ahead and move on, man. So thank you very much.
Yep, see you.
All right, thanks. Mm-hmm. Something I wanted to point out that based on what the caller was saying there, was that, you know, the property values and the idea that he's talking about. We don't think that and this is something that we're observing, that we don't think that those terms are going to mean anything anytime in the near future. When you're talking about the value of your property, the value of your property should be in what that property can do for you, how that property can be used to benefit you, to keep you and your family sustained, to keep your life going, basically, not in what it's worth on the resale market. That's where our value structures have been skewed. That's where we've kind of gone insane as a society. Land used to be worth what it was you could get out of that land, not based on what somebody else would pay for that land. Saladin is in the chat room. He's talking. He's got a lot of, you know, things that he's talking about, and these are things that we've been talking about again for the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks since we started on this kick. Along with doing all the things that Saladin is talking about actually doing, you know, learning certain skill sets that would be, you know, if you didn't have anything to rely on, if you didn't have the government or the system or anything else to rely on, you could build a log cabin. You could go fishing. You could, you know, understand what, you know, what is out there available for you to eat or drink or what have you. Those kind of life skills that used to be an inherent part of our cultural fabric that no longer exists. These are the things that are important, but as you mentioned, TC, it's also a matter of trying to live between the lines, because right now this system is in place. So it's in my mind, it's a matter of doing both. It's a way of trying to wean yourself off the system while also draining as much resources from that system as possible. You don't want to be reliant on that system. You don't want to find yourself, you know, stuck and, you know, in a position where if that system isn't there, you have nowhere else to turn. You want all these different skill sets. And we're trying to figure out a strategy, because we're not preparing necessarily for the collapse of the system itself, although that's a possibility in our minds, and we want to be, you know, we want to have a buffer between ourselves and it. The analogy I think we used in a show before was that the system is a sinking ship. When a ship sinks, it tends to suck down anything that's in its immediate vicinity around with it. So we want to make sure that there's as much of a buffer between us and that system as possible. While that system's in place, though, we think everybody should be taking as much advantage of that system as they possibly can. And the way to take advantage of that system is to have a different value structure than what's required by that system. If you're concerned about property values, if you're concerned about buying that home and being able to hold on to it and everything else, owning a home is meaningless when the government can come along and say that the home is a blight and they're going to go ahead and sell it off for some commercial development thing. Owning a home is meaningless if you're paying a huge amount of property taxes every year. How do you own that property? You're collecting property taxes. Well, this isn't a feudal system. You don't have serfs working the land, and you're not giving a percentage of your cut. You're just paying out of your hard-earned, you know, your own labor to maintain this property that you supposedly own. That's not ownership. I think we need to get away from the idea that land can be owned, that you have a piece of property that you maintain, that you have a piece of property that you are the steward of, and that you get what you can from that property to sustain yourself and your family.
Right, right, man. It kind of goes back to the idea the Indians had that you're thankful for what the earth provides to you. You know, you understand there's a inherent relationship between you and the lands around you that no matter how far removed you think you are from it, it never really dissolves. You still absolutely are connected to it and still absolutely need it for any form of vitality.
Right, right. The idea of ownership to them was illusionary, because anything that you said you owned, if somebody could take it away from you, it wasn't yours anymore. That's not something you owned. But the only thing that you really could own were the things that you could actually carry with you. Anything else that you said was yours by the goodwill of your tribe, of the people around you. It's getting that to the mentality, I think. That's the thing we've been talking about, is that, you know, what do I have? What do I have around me? All these different symbols, all these different machines and devices and these different, you know, forms of entertainment and these different distractions, all these different things that I have that kind of I make up as me, that I think I need. These aren't needful things. These aren't things that serve a purpose in my life beyond being a distraction, beyond being a form of entertainment. And it's, we're getting to, I know you've been doing this, TC. I know that I'm doing it. I think I'm on my third, fourth, or fifth week of actually divesting myself of stuff on eBay, and I'm still cutting through the clutter. I'm still trying to thin it down to the bare minimums, the essentials. And it's a weight off my shoulders, divesting myself of these different things. In the meantime, I'm also doing the things that Saladin's talking about. I'm, you know, educating myself on, you know, basic survival skills, on, doing things, you know, being able to live off the land, being able to go out and, you know, build a log cabin, prepare a shelter, things like that, and also storing that water, getting food and everything else together, so that, you know, shit, man, if TC becomes clear that, you know, this is falling apart, and TC says, I got the perfect spot picked out on the coast of Florida, if you can get your ass here, let's make it happen, then I'm ready to go. You know, it's just a matter of, you know, getting to that point to where we have that level of preparation and, you know, making sure that those people we care about are as prepared and ready to go as we can get them if they, you know, choose to participate.
Right on. Real quick, what was the name of that magazine that you've been reading lately? Because you've drawn a lot of really good stuff out of that, so...
magazine.
Or show, radio show, maybe? No?
No, not off the top of my head.
Survival guide type thing? Soldier of Fortune type magazine? I can't remember.
So you, are you talking about the SAS Survival Guide?
Yeah, that's it, right there.
Yeah. Yeah, the SAS Survival Guide is a, there's a several of them out now, and what they are, this was developed by, I don't know what their special forces are called or whatever, but this guy is basically a an elite soldier for the British Royal Forces. And he put together several survival guides now, and some of are based on the region of the world you're in. So, there's a survival guide for North America. There's a survival guide for Europe. There's a survival guide for North Africa, things like that. But there's also, basic building of shelters, basic hunting and things like and things of that nature. When I was a kid, I had this book. It was just this really cool book. It was almost impossible to find anymore, and I can't remember the title of the thing. But this book was composed by a guy who either he had – this was written probably in the 40s or 50s. And either he had lived himself among the Indian tribes on reservations and everything else, or his grandfather had lived among Indian tribes or whatever. So there was a generation of people that he was drawing the information from who were actually doing the things that these people did. And his book was like the SAS Survival Guide. It was a guide on, how to skin an animal, how to pitch a teepee, how to do all those things, make arrowheads, all those kinds of things. And it would be, a wonderful, it was an incredible book to have when I was a kid. It just set my imagination on fire, all these different things that I could go out into the woods and do, if I wanted to go out and do those things. And now it would just be a wonderful book to have because it seems like this information might have some practical value.
Yeah, and I think further reading, that there's a ton of actual websites out there that have really good ideas on them. One that was interesting to me a few weeks ago, and I've really been digging on, is that Monolithic Dome Home Living.
Right on.
To me, the idea of having some form of shelter that's virtually indestructible that you can go to, live in, and it's power efficient, it's cost efficient. That puts one of those basic tiers of Maslow's hierarchy of needs, it puts that at rest, at ease, so I can focus on other things. So, the first thing might necessarily be knowing how to build a log home, where that's not a bad thing to learn, but maybe learning how to construct a dome home, they're of concrete, which I'm sure that a good red clay can take the place of in a time of need. I mean, when you think about building structure, I don't think a stack of toothpicks will hold up as well as a pile of rocks, if you know what I'm saying.
Right. Well, I think just any basic, having that knowledge on how to build a shelter. And those sites where they, where it's people developing these things. So we don't have to go back 200 years to, the technology that was available then, although those skills would be useful. We could actually, look at different things that people are developing today and then try to figure out how to apply those things on our own, like the dome structures and everything else. Another site that's been, it's kind of good, and I have to caution people when they Google for these kinds of sites. When they Google sites for, survival skills or, self-preparation, whatever, you have to be careful with these kinds of sites because usually what these sites do is there'll be some decent information on these sites, but they also exist to market a certain line of product, okay, or several lines of products. So these sites are sponsored by people who have a newfangled tent that they're selling or people that are selling, different types of seeds and things like that. And all that may be fine and good or different, one of the things I saw was you can get these backpacks, okay? These backpacks have a week's worth of food, a week's worth of water, the shelter building materials and everything else. And you can get these backpacks, but they're like $250 a piece, okay? And it's, you know, it's an interesting article about the things you might need, but the back, it doesn't tell you what's in the backpack. It doesn't tell you exactly what it is that you might need, because if you knew the things that you need, you might just go out and put together your own backpack. You might not need to actually spend $250 on it. So you have to be careful with these things, because some of it's a way to grab your money. But there's a lot of good information out there if you're willing to do the research. But, and again, I think this is something that we've been, you know, hammering on as well. Doing the research isn't enough. You have to figure out how to apply it. You have to start. There's no point in waiting for the shit to hit the fan before you start taking action, taking steps. That we encourage everyone to take steps now, to take action now, to do what they can now to begin building that buffer between them and this collapsing system. I don't think anybody can deny that the system is collapsing. So the further, you know, you are away from the needs of that system, the further you are separate from that system, the better off you'll be.
Right on. I think it's definitely it's important for people to, you know, their to-go bag, have some kind of a pop-up tent or a portable shelter, you know, for temporary use. Obviously, you can't endure any long time in one of these nylon tents, but, you know, it'll keep the bugs out and keep the rain off of you in a pinch. So that's something that is actually one of the very few things that I've held on to is camping style equipment.
Right on. And something, I guess something I was thinking about today, because we were out shopping and we were looking at tents, and I saw this one tent that was, it's a 3-room cottage tent is what they called it. Okay. And it's basically, when it's all set up, it's about 20 feet long. It'll sleep 10 people. It's 20 feet long, and it's a 6-foot ceiling at the center point of it and everything else. It's just, you know, it's this Cadillac of tents, right? And it's in this nice big bag and everything, about the size of a military duffel bag. And while I'm sitting there thinking, you know what, that'd be kind of cool to have. Well, it's cool to have if I've got a way to transport that thing around. That I'd be better off making sure that everybody in my family had a small tent that they had, you know, that they could carry on their own, rather than having this monster that I'm not going to be able to take with me very far. So, you know, you want to kind of also measure your means before you invest in something that you won't be able to use.
Yeah, that's certainly something that I forget to mention. I forget that most people tuning in probably aren't aware of the minimalist mentality that I have. So, you know, when I go run off and make blanket statements like that, obviously, you know, you want to measure and get exactly what you need and not more than that.
I know, because, you know, the first thing I thought when I saw this tent, I was like, yeah, man, that's the one right there. That's the one that I want to have because, you know, it's got 3 rooms in it and shit. You know? But if I'm humping that thing up the hill, that's the only thing I'm carrying.
Right on. Right on. And unless you're used to doing long nature walks, you know, the first few weeks are going to be ridiculous on you, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, we're obviously also talking worst-case zombie holocaust-style scenario. We're not talking about dealing with what's actually here at this point. You know, I don't want to stray away from the idea that building up small communities of like-minded individuals is the right way to go. We, by all rights, you know, we do have the ability to succeed if enough people collect together and say, hey, I don't want anything to do with this big system anymore. I know the last time that this happened, it failed miserably, but that's because they chose to actually go to war over it rather than just saying, no, fuck you, get off my land, you know?
I think we're transitioning in that direction. I think that, you know, especially with the conversations we're having on the show and everything else, that we're moving that way. And initially it's starting out with this community that's forming around, you know, this show. The people that we deal with people locally. We've got our friends and everything else that listen to the show that are in our, you know, I've got folks here in Austin, you've got folks there, in Florida, who are listening to the show, who you're having conversations with, who, you know, who are part of this, you know, this movement, this kind of push. So this community is starting to establish itself. And even with the distance, you know, the different geographical distances, we're still trying to find ways, I think, to make sure that we're able to give each other a hand up, basically, that we're able to make watch out for each other's needs and watch out for each other's, you know, watch each other's backs and everything. So it's interesting to see how all this is shaping out. And, again, we do talk about the extremes. We do talk about that zombie apocalypse mentality. But on the other hand, on the other side of the coin is, let's say this thing, the system manages to perpetuate itself and just changes shape instead of collapsing. It becomes something else. Then it's just going to be a matter of trying to figure out how to manage or negate that system's influence on us so we don't find ourselves in the same position in the future or someplace worse. Which is again where this community idea comes in, and it comes into play when we're moving towards this clan, where you're not so much reliant on a faceless, you know, nameless entity, you know, the system, the government, or whatever, this thing that you know changes at a whim. When you're more beholden to and reliant upon a group of people who you know you can invest your energy into, a group of people who you know that have your back and you have their back, that kind of thing. And it's a hard process because you and I, coming from a very left-hand path mentality, we're not neither of us are really willing to give that kind of trust, if you will, to just anybody. That it takes a lot to prove yourself, you know, to be worth that kind of investment, to get to a point where you go, okay, if somebody says they need something, and I have it to give, they're going to get it. And because I know that if I say I need something, the same is going to be returned to me.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that when you do get to that point, and it certainly should be a hard thing. I mean, I'm happy that it is such a difficult process for me to place that kind of trust into another person, because when we do finally reach that point, where you do trust that person, you know it's a two-way street, and that there's the chances of any kind of deception or misuse of that or abuse of that relationship will not be done light-handedly or light-heartedly. It'll be something that heavily weighs and probably won't prevail for that very reason.
Well, that's the biggest thing that we need to safeguard ourselves against. That's the biggest thing that we need to be concerned about as we're taking these steps to prepare ourselves. We're taking these steps to be self-determined. Whether the system falls apart or not, self-determination is what it is we're pursuing. But if we have somebody come along who agrees with our ideologies, pays lip services to it and everything else, claims to have some level of self-determination, and their route to self-determination that they see for themselves is through our charity, through our goodwill. If that's how they're going to become self-determined, then we don't need those people in our camp. We don't need those people in this thing that we're doing with this, because they're no good to us. They aren't helping with what it is we're trying to accomplish. So it's just a matter of seeing, you know, first of all, be self-determined, be self-sufficient. If you can achieve a level of self-sufficiency, then we start talking about, okay, how do we pool our self-sufficient resources? How do we start to benefit from what interaction with one another? The other thing, and of course, again, we're talking about a system that if it doesn't collapse, it's going to change. It's going to become something else. And we mentioned this, I think, in a previous show. While it is in motion, while it is shifting and transforming, we should be working to nudge that system, nudge that process in the direction that is most beneficial to us. So while on one hand we're talking about non-participation, while on one hand we're talking about getting out of the participating in the channels that we are encouraged to participate in by, you know, whether it's watching certain shows, where it's engaging in certain ideas about education, those kinds of things, withdrawn from that and becoming self-sufficient. On the other hand, very directed and determined participation, where, you know, you are voting on certain things, you're pushing certain agendas, which, you know, which benefit you. So it's engaging that process, engaging that system, not as a part of that system, but as an outside agent trying to influence it.
Right, and I think the thing that kind of wraps both of those things together is being able to step back far enough and really see the whole picture. You know, really think about how things are going to affect the actual outcome of whatever it is that you're moving towards, not just seeing some immediate gratification set in front of you and thinking I'm going to move towards that, but knowing that you know, it's going to secure gratification, if that makes any sense in the way that I'm saying it, knowing that it's going to procure long-term benefit, that's the thing that kind of wraps those two ideas together.
Right, exactly. That, you know, and it's we haven't really pushed any kind of political agenda. My mind has been anything that you see as being in opposition to personal liberties, to individual freedoms, then you need to step up and be a voice saying that that is opposed to the values of our society. That you need to make sure that when people start talking about choosing security over freedom, that there's a voice of opposition saying that, no, it should be freedom regardless of security. We talk about, I'm trying to think of some news story right now. There's some sort of regulation on, this is it. There was a news story that came out recently that a lot of communities, a lot of city ordinances, even states, are saying that you cannot grow food with the intent that you're going to sell the food to other people or share it with your friends and family. But they're trying to make that illegal. And the intent of that law, the upfront intent of that law is that, well, if you're growing your own food and it's not regulated by the FDA, well, then that food is dangerous. It can make people sick, which is why they don't want you distributing it, okay? But the other side of it, it means that you have one less channel for self-sufficiency. You have one less option as far as you know, taking care of yourself and others. You're also more isolated from the people around you. So these farmers markets that, you know, set up in the middle of the city and everything else, that are local people growing their own food for themselves, and then they have some abundance, and they see that as a way to help other people eat healthier, make them aware of other options. This is the government's way to actually kind of squash that process. And it's just another thing. And it takes people like us being able to say, no, that's not right. That doesn't make any sense. You know, when the FDA can't stop cantaloupes from being infected with salmonella and everything else, making a bunch of people sick, well, I don't trust the FDA to make decisions about where I'm going to get my food. Let me take that risk. If I get sick, it's on my head. Don't take that, you know, don't take my freedom away from me and tell me you're going to put a diaper in my ass and take care of me.
Right on. And that's a perfect point to wrap this show up at, man. We're just outside of 2 minutes left. For all of the new people who tuned in this week, we do this particular segment every Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. It has been our decision that we will continue to talk about this until it does not need to be talked about anymore. So, you know, that could be a very, very, very long time. What the hell else did I want to say? Jason, awesome show, man. It was really cool. Got a bunch of new people tuning in. Hopefully they'll check out the rest of our archive. Go to creativeoddities.com and, you know, check out your artwork. You know, buy a couple posters, couple T-shirts, you know, that stuff directly. It helps you along, you know.
Right on. And check out Satanic International Network, the www.satanicinternationalnetwork.com. There are a lot of people who think differently, who have different ideas about things. They might not all be talking about this kind of stuff, but they will kind of open your head, basically, to a lot of different ideas. Some of it's total bullshit. Some of it is nonsense. You know, trust me, you're going to go there and you're going to see all kinds of different perspectives. But if you want to see a place where, you know, thinking differently is the norm, check that site out.
Right on. And with all that being said, dude, I'm going to roll the outro.
Right on, man. I'll talk to you later.
Talk to you later.
Thank you for listening to The Ooze. Opinions expressed by our guests or callers do not necessarily represent the opinions held by TC, Zach, Jason, Matt, or any other institution represented by them. If you have been offended by the production of this show, we are sorry, but this is the old expression goes. Tough luck. Special thanks to Dr. Rocky DeRoma for his contribution to this outro. The Ooze is a Creative Oddity Studios product and is presented by Titanic International Network as its official Blog Talk radio show. Why waste your time with those other guys?